Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is January 22, 2021, and our first podcast of the new year. It has been a few weeks since our last program. Please understand that it is not for lack of trying. We try hard to present one or two programs each month, but the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays presented some scheduling challenges. We are working behind the scenes to line up some interesting interviews over the next couple of months, so stay tuned. Murfreesboro, Tennessee is a medium-sized city situated about 30 miles due south of Nashville in Middle Tennessee. Once a sleepy college town, it began growing rapidly in the mid-1980s. Today, it continues to be one of the fastest-growing communities in the Southeast. As they have grown, they have developed excellent parks and recreation facilities and programs. The City of Murfreesboro Park and Recreation Agency has often been recognized for excellence. They have extensive greenways and wetlands under management by the Parks Division, and the Wilderness Station is a highly regarded environmental education programming facility. Yesterday afternoon, I recorded an interview with Kristen Hopkins. Kristen is heading up a new program under Parks and Recreation called the Murfreesboro Indigenous Plant Project. As you will hear, the city recognized that it had a need for locally sourced native plant materials for use in the city parks, for natural areas, restoration, and for riparian restoration projects in conjunction with public works. These plant materials can be expensive to procure from commercial nurseries, and so they have set up shop to produce an abundance of these materials in-house. Some plant materials are also made available to the public at seasonal sales, encouraging property owners to incorporate native species in their home landscapes. And so I hope you'll enjoy my interview with Kristen Hopkins. Kristen Hopkins, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you for having me today.
It's terrific to have you with us. You are, we're dialing in on a Zoom call today. I'm in Nashville, you're in Murfreesboro. The sun's starting to peek out here. It's been a little bit of a drizzly morning, but what's the weather like down there in the borough?
Still gray. It's been raining pretty much all day, but we've actually needed it, so I'm not complaining.
It has
much.
Been a little dry, there's no question. Mm-hmm. So, Kristen, I want to talk with you today at some length about what you're doing in Murfreesboro. The Murfreesboro Indigenous Plants Project is part of the Department of Parks and Recreation in Murfreesboro, and I'm sort of a Parks and Recreation geek. Before we get started with that, it's sort of a tradition on this podcast to inquire of our guests about their background and, you know, just how they got into the natural resources conservation field. And everyone has a story, so I'd love to hear about yours. I have not met you personally before. Mm-hmm. Don't know that much about you, but I'd love to hear your story.
Sure. Yeah, it's not an especially exciting one, but I did get into conservation in a pretty roundabout way, a non-traditional way, I would say. You know, I was in college getting my undergrad in English, of all things. I like to write and actually write papers, which is weird, I know. But I started exploring other things in college, and I started taking anthropology courses and history courses and all these other different kinds of courses. And through practical anthropology, I met a group of people working on permaculture, of all things. And that's kind of the concept of using food plants in your landscaping.
Right.
And so their focus was very environmental too. It was wanting to do something good for the earth that followed ecological principles. And so that really captured my interest. And I realized at that point that I wanted to do something more. And so I started looking into it, and I started looking at grad schools. And as you mentioned before, I came across Slippery Rock University in Pennsylvania, and they had a really good program, environmental education program.
Okay.
So I got my master's in environmental education. So in the middle of that schooling, I stumbled across the Tennessee Naturalist Program.
Okay.
And I worked with that organization. I still am with that organization. And that is a natural history, adult natural history education statewide program.
Right.
And worked with them writing grants, just helping with the administration, doing all that stuff. And in the course of that, I met my future boss, Margaret Cameron, who was the director of Owls Hill Nature Sanctuary at the time. And she offered me a job. And I took it, of course. And
So
so,
Owls Hill is a nature center that's out in Williamson County.
right, it's in Brentwood.
Right.
And we, gosh, it's a very small nonprofit, so everybody did everything. And I did grant writing, I did newsletter writing, I did environment education programs, I did resource management. And it was there that I discovered that resource management was really what I wanted to focus on. I met so many people that I'm fortunate enough to call my friends now. So many professionals and experts in the field. We went all over that place and just explored and discovered. And that's when, my love of conservation and my love of plants really started to go. And I did that for 5 years. I was the naturalist there for several years. And did a lot of the lands management stuff there for several years. And so when Rachel, my current supervisor, called me and said, "Hey, I want you to come and be my natural resource manager at Parks and Rec," I said, "Absolutely. This is where I live. This is where I want my work to be reflected, the work that we do to be reflected in our hometown." And so I'm really passionate about what we're working on. And I'm so fortunate and glad to be here in Murfreesboro and working with such a great team. So that's kind of.
Well, that's a terrific story. The Murfreesboro Parks and Rec Department is well regarded across the region and the nation, I presume, certainly in the state, really for excellence. And they've gotten several awards for programming and facility development and that sort of thing. And their outdoors program is really well regarded. And so, how long have you been there, Kristen?
I just finished my second year, so I've been there for 2 years and a few months. The division that I'm over, the Natural Resource Division, it's only 3 years old.
Okay.
It's a very brand new division, and so I'm really fortunate to be able to be laying the groundwork for
On the
this
ground
stuff.
floor, absolutely.
Yeah.
So
So it's
fun.
very exciting. Yeah.
So you're involved with a thing called the Indigenous Plants Project.
Right.
And of course it's part of a larger program that you refer to as the Natural Resources Management Program. How did the city of Murfreesboro come to the decision to do that, to have these programs?
So Outdoor Murfreesboro, and the Wilderness Station. I don't know if you're familiar with the Wilderness Station. It's
I
a
am familiar. In fact, one of my previous guests was Deborah Pascal,
Okay.
was involved as a staff person there for several years. She's retired now, but yes, I'm very familiar with it.
Okay. So the concept of environmental education and nature education has been in Murfreesboro for quite a number of years through the Wilderness Station, and they call that Outdoor Murfreesboro. So it's not just environmental education, it's also adventure recreation, and other things like that. So, but a few years ago, the leadership in the Parks Department, Rachel and Nate and Angela, they got together and they said, "I think it's time that we start managing our natural resources, and we develop a program, a division for that," which I think is very shows a lot of foresight and a very good decision, if I do say so myself. So in the instance of this, where, you know, a lot of times with resource management, you get management before you get education. Here in Murfreesboro, we've had education going for several years. And now it's time to start managing our resources. So started a few years ago. And as I said, I was fortunate enough to get in there.
What were the problems that they were observing that needed to be resolved with this sort of management? I mean, was this a response to issues that they were seeing on the ground?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with invasive plant species in our habitats, the challenges of managing natural areas within very urbanized areas with stormwater pollution, trash pollution, and things like that, wanting to address basically the things that they were talking about in their education pieces.
That's terrific. So there was an awareness of these problems on the landscape that needed to be worked on.
Right. Correct. Okay.
So tell us in some detail about what is this program that you're doing, the Indigenous Plants Program. Why are we doing that, and why is there a need to do that?
This started with natural resource management. A lot of what we do is habitat restoration and looking around at the availability of not only native plants, but straight native species that were preferably sourced from our region. Just not a lot of that available. And so I decided one day, I said, well, why don't we just grow our own? Let's just grow our own. And so I asked Rachel, I said, hey, I'm going to try this. And she said, go for it. And that's really nice. Nice to hear. So it kind of started as like a need for parks to have appropriate plants. But then it kind of snowballed into we can offer these to our citizens. And any native plants that they put in their yard is only going to benefit parks as well.
Sure.
As well as the overall general ecology of our area. So that's kind of how it got started.
Well, there's a lot there that you've said that needs to be unpacked a little bit. Your observation that native plants are scarce out there, as far as purchasing them, is true in one respect. At least they are there, and there are nurserymen that grow them, but mm-hmm. they tend to be expensive, especially if you're buying in quantities enough to restore numbers of acres. You know, I mean, if you're just buying ones and twos for your front yard, for your perennial border, not too bad, out of pocket. But if you're buying hundreds or thousands of a particular species, absent having, contracting them to be grown for you, and that can mm-hmm. be expensive also. So do you have a greenhouse there that you're working with, or how are you, what do you have to work with?
Well, we, Parks currently has just kind of a farm property that we haven't developed yet. I'm not sure if we are going to develop it. That's outside of my wheelhouse, but there is an old farmhouse on there, and we've kind of commandeered it for outdoor Murfreesboro overflow storage. And so I basically stole a room and some outside space. And so I grow the plants inside, and then because they're natives, I just put them outside.
Okay.
So right now we don't really need a greenhouse. I in the future, we'll grow it out, and we'll probably install some, but yeah.
So what sorts of things are you growing?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. Trees, shrubs, grasses, sedges, wildflowers, anything. What we're trying to focus on is species that are absolutely native to Rutherford County, or specifically the inner basin of Central Tennessee. We do have some things that are maybe a little bit outside that range, but for the most part, we're trying to focus on things that are appropriate for our area. And a lot of these things we've managed to collect ourselves in our seeds, I mean, from our parked properties, and people have donated some seed. And so we're trying to be as regionally appropriate as far as we can be.
Yeah. You know, earlier on, you made the statement that you're trying to develop plants that are straight species. Mm-hmm. Now, I know what that means, but maybe a listener might not. Would you talk about that just a little bit? So we're talking about straight species versus hybridized types of plants.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, well, hybridization does occur naturally.
Sure.
You know, but what happens often in the nursery industry is, how do I say it? So we're talking about genetic diversity in plants. The reason why we can't marry our cousins is partially because of the offspring, you know,
sure.
The health of the offspring and that genetic material. It's the same concept with plants. In the nursery industry, a lot of times you have plants that are manipulated genetically, or they are multiple clones of one parent plant. And so maybe the genetic diversity isn't there.
Yeah, they're selected for a particular characteristic.
Correct. Yeah,
right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right.
So in nature, the genetic diversity is more so because you've got pollinators that are going from plant to plant, so they're getting all kinds of genetic diversity. And so in that situation, the best one survives. The best one, you know, makes it. The best one is the best one for that situation.
Right.
So when we're looking at propagating these things, we want to use seeds from different populations, seeds from not only Rutherford County but outside counties that are in our area, and even regional seeds that are like from the southeast, you know, and that's gonna make sure that the plants we're growing has that genetic diversity.
So give us some examples of some of the things that you're growing. You know, maybe some of the grasses you mentioned, sedges.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a bunch of gardeners listen to this program.
and
some of the graduates of the Tennessee Naturalist program tend to listen to this program also. So
yeah.
talk to us a little bit about, if you can give us some examples of some of the things that you're growing and that you're particularly encouraged about or...
Well, I always have my seasonal favorites. My favorites always change. But right now we have, for our little guys, I actually just got a bunch of little saplings. Got some witch hazel going.
Uh-huh.
I've got some Carolina buckthorn, a few aronia species. I got seed for, hopefully those will go. I've never done those before, so we'll see how that
That's
goes.
Not That's not what I'm familiar with.
Aronia is the chokeberry,
black
chokeberry, and
okay.
The red chokeberry. And those kind of shrubs, I've got some bur oaks, which I'm really excited about. I love the bur oak. That's one of my favorites. Post oaks we've got for wildflowers. We've got Amsonia species,
mm-hmm.
Two varieties of that are native to Rutherford County. Cardinal lobelias, different kinds of lobelias, different kinds of, well, no, I take that back. I only have one kind of goldenrod right now, but I'm going to change that soon. Hopefully we'll have a little bit more diversity there.
What about your grasses?
So we've got a little blue stem, of course, which is one of my favorites. I'm going to try split beard blue stem soon. Indian grass we've got going. We've got side oats grama. I said that right.
Right.
We've got wild rye. What's some of that? I need to pull up my list. I can give you a full.
Well, you're doing great. That gives us some.
Yeah.
General sense of how wide a variety of things that you're doing there. And, you know, tell us about where you are practically using them.
We in parks, what we're trying to do is some of our landscaping is necessarily kind of standard operational. Your boxwoods and your things that are easy to manage, I guess, from a outside landscaper contracted situation. But what we want to do is we want to start incorporating more natives into our landscaping. And so we've done a few beds here and there, like at our trailheads, our greenway trailheads. We've put in some, maybe some more formal native plantings, just as a demonstration of like, hey, you can use these and they could be nice. You know, mm-hmm. they could look like what you have, we have come to expect in our landscaping. So it's kind of like a transition phase. So it's, a lot of people don't like that wild look, and that's okay. You can still use natives in a more formalized setting. And sure. so we're going to be putting those in there, but we've also done, pretty soon we'll be doing a little prairie, kind of a pocket prairie installation on the greenway. And it's about a half acre. It's not very big, but we're going to grow our own plugs for that. So we're going to try plugs. And so we'll be using seed that we've either purchased from, say, Roundstone, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with, mm-hmm. or some of the seeds that we've collected ourselves in that planting. So we're gonna try that. I haven't tried plugs before, so this will be a fun experiment.
you're trying to grow some plugs out?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we'll work with volunteers and scouts, and they'll put in the holes and the plants, and just kind of a community effort on that one. So. Yeah.
So what are the benefits of native plants from your perspective that you're trying to demonstrate and to show to the public?
I think, so many things. So we're all familiar with Dr. Tallamy's work, and his ideas that, you know, 90% of our bird species, the babies, eat caterpillars, and you can't have caterpillars without their host plants. And so I think the important part of that message is that, gosh, we can fix this. We can, you know, all the fragmentation, the habitat loss, the species decline, we have an opportunity to fix this. And the easiest way that we can do that is by putting native plants in our yard. Okay. And we want to make that easy for people to do.
Excellent.
But yeah, so, you know, there's so many benefits to native plants, whether it's from a host plant pollinator perspective, whether it's from a water quality perspective, whether it's from ecosystem function, looking at the whole ecosystem and those plants working together to regulate temp, to improve water, to create habitat for wildlife. There's just a lot of things involved, and plants are the base of that.
Excellent. Yeah. Now you're referring to Dr. Doug Tallamy in your comment there, and his first book was Bringing Nature Home. Mm-hmm. That's at least the first one I became aware of. And for listeners that want to learn more, it's a tremendous, tremendous resource. There's several YouTube videos of him doing talks about that relationship between insects mm-hmm. and native plants and other wildlife, particularly birds.
Yeah.
And you really can't, if you don't have insects, you don't have birds, because that's how they go. They especially when they're raising their young ones.
That's right. Yep.
So. And he has developed out the concepts that there are some species that are actually, for instance, he talks about the oak tree being a host for all kinds of insects. So if you're going to try to get your bang for the buck, an oak tree is a is really a good one to do.
That's right. I think it's hundreds of different kinds of insects.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So are you doing any other public educational outreach as far as this program is concerned?
Yeah, you know, it's a fairly new program, and of course it's not our only responsibility. Right. We have many other things to do, but we are currently revamping our website. I just had a wonderful conversation with a local artist who's going to be working with us to develop just fun little animations to kind of educate about what we're doing. for our website. We're always on Facebook. And then for me, I always have fun with my volunteers. That's my educational piece. What I like to work with people, citizens who are interested in this, and get them their hands in it and helping me do this. And then they take the message out too. And I have done a few other things. I'll probably be speaking at the Rutherford County, the series, presenter series that they do at the farmers market.
Very good.
Talking about it. And then I've done presentations for the bee folks and anyway, so stuff like that. Yeah.
Kristen, you know, when I was speaking to you on the phone, trying to arrange you to be on the program, we talked briefly about how rare it is for a city, park and recreation agency, to have a program like this, particularly as far as actually growing the plants and making them available to the department and other city departments and to the community at large. Tell us about that. You mentioned that perhaps New York City had a program like this, but you weren't aware of others. Say more.
When I first started this concept and was running it by my supervisor, I was looking at other examples, just so I could say, hey, other people are doing this, but there's really not a lot. New York City was the one that I saw that was the most developed. It's called the, let me get this right, the Greenbelt Native Plant Center. And it's a program of the New York City Parks and Rec Department. Right. And it's they've got a 15-acre setup and they've been going for several years. But their outline, their program, their mission, everything that they have going, I was like, wow, that's so cool. You know, I want to do that. So they were kind of like the model, I guess, for starting this. But again, I think there may be one in Chicago. Don't quote me on that. But there were a couple of others, but this one was the one that was like, this is what we need to be doing.
Well, I'm proud of Murfreesboro for being so progressive and pursuing this. It's well needed for sure. Tell us, Kristen, as we wind up, how can the public access you, your program, your information? Are there websites, Facebook pages, Twitter accounts? Tell us about how to plug into what you're doing.
Sure. Yeah, we are, like I said, we're revamping our web pages, but you can find us online at the MurfreesboroTN.gov website under Parks and Recreation. Just do a Google search for Murfreesboro Indigenous Plant Project, and it'll pop up. Also, I think my email address is on there. But we'll freely give that to anybody. It's just khopkins@murfreesborotn.gov. Just contact me. On Facebook, we're under Outdoor Murfreesboro. And we'll post things like sales coming up or volunteer needs or anything like that. I also do have like a volunteer group that I have. So.
Well, tell us more.
For volunteering, I love working with volunteers. That's probably through my work with the Tennessee Naturalist Program and all the great volunteers and students that I've met through there. It's just, when you do something for nothing, I don't know, it just means more. And so I don't know. So like when I'm working with volunteers and they want to be there for free, I usually give them a plant. I'm not going to lie. But if you work with me, you'll get a free plant.
A souvenir plant.
Yeah. That's native to our region. But I just love working with volunteers. And so, but we always need them too, because we are a very tiny, tiny division. And the MIP project is a side project outside of our regular work. And so that we need volunteer help. I'm not going to lie about that. Yeah.
So, okay. So the call is out.
Yep.
Exactly. You're not particular if people from Davidson County want to travel out there to volunteer with you? Is that appropriate?
Yeah. Come on.
All right. Super. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for taking a little time today to talk with us about what you're doing. And I'm going to be tuned in and watching your progress as things go into the future. And wish you the best of luck with your program.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today. Thank you, Kristen.
All right.